GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Thanks for joining us. I'm a scientist, author, and entrepreneur that is really passionate about sustainability.
And I'm your passionate producer, Bob Kessler.
And together we explore environmental issues and learn about sustainable innovations and meet the passionate people that are changing the world.
Those passionate people with ideas that make both common and economic sense. That's how they get on the show.
Bob, what are we learning about this week?
Homes that are so efficient. In fact, they call them zero energy. That's just how efficient they are. We'll learn about that. .eco. You know, we got .com and .gov and .edu and .net and .org. Well, .eco, that caters to our sustainable friends on the web. And our good friend, Chef Maria, has a recipe for us just in time for spring.
Well, they all sound delicious, and I'm looking forward to learning all about it on this week's edition of GreenSense. We're kicking off GreenSense with Chef Maria Ibrahim, award-winning entrepreneur, TV chef, author, and healthy living expert with a healthy recipe made mainly from sustainably raised ingredients. Welcome back, Chef.
Hey, how is it going?
Fantastic. And you've got some great recipes for a spring time meal.
Yeah, absolutely. Spring is the renaissance. It's the reawakening of our taste buds and just bringing everything back to life after the slumber of winter. So it's a very exciting time for food and for enjoying food, and for really getting your taste buds in tune.
Well, here in the Midwest, spring's got a very special part in our hearts because we suffer through those long, cold winters. But you out in the West, is spring as significant as we feel it here?
Oh, definitely. You know, at least this year on the West Coast, we've been blessed with a lot of rain, which has been wonderful. We really need it. So I feel like it's definitely a transition. The sun's starting to shine. The days are longer, more sunshine in the evening, and it's a great time to just get back into the swing of things with fresh flavors.
So what do you have for us this week?
Okay, so one of my favorite foods and food combinations for the spring is salmon and asparagus. Just thinking about that combination, they just go so perfectly together. So one of my favorite treatments for salmon is to grill it on a cedar plank. Have you guys ever had it on a cedar plank?
I have, and it's fantastic, and it's easy to cook.
Very easy. Very, very easy. So what we do is we soak a cedar plank, and you can pick up a cedar plank at your local, you know, just home goods store. And the key is that you want to soak it for at least 30 minutes because you don't want to create a fire on your barbecue.
You suggest soaking it in anything special or just plain water?
Just water. Just warm water is perfectly fine. Warm water does the trick. Make sure it's submerged. So if it starts to float to the surface, you can just put something like a heavy pot or something on top of it so it stays submerged. Give it a good soak. And then when you take it out, you take your salmon. And when I talk about fresh fish, it's super important that everybody listening understands that wild-caught salmon is a very, very different species than farm-raised. They eat differently. They look different. Their nutritional component is different. They're much higher in essential omega-3s, which are the good omegas, about 30% more than the farm-raised. So I want you to always look for that beautiful ruby-colored flesh that you'll find in wild-caught salmon.
But Chef, that's easy to say, but I find it's very difficult to find wild-caught salmon these days. Do you have a source for where we can go to get that?
Yeah, actually, if you can't find it in your local stores, there is a great resource that you can find online. And we can share that with everybody after the show as a link, but it's a great resource where you can always find wild, sustainably caught seafood.
Fantastic, because that's really key. Most the salmon we see these days is farm raised.
Yeah, you know, at my local stores, you can definitely find it. It's more of a search, but the world is so open to us with the internet. It's great. You can have it delivered to you within a day.
Fantastic.
So you take your wild-caught salmon, and a very simple, delicious seasoning that I love to do is with a little bit of maple syrup. Okay, it brings out the sweetness of the salmon just a little bit. And a combination of that with Dijon mustard. Now, the Dijon, with its sharpness combined with the maple glaze, is a really lovely combination. And you would take, for a good, you know, 4-ounce portion of salmon, you would take about a tablespoon of the Dijon mustard, mix it with about a teaspoon of the maple syrup, and real maple syrup, please, not the kind that has, you know, additional sugars added. Mix those two together with a sprinkle of white pepper and a little grind of coarse sea salt. And mix those four ingredients together. Slather the top side. You want the skin side down on your cedar plank. Slather the top and grill that with the cover closed for about 7 minutes. It really cooks very quickly. And when you close the cover, you don't have to worry about turning it or anything because you have it on the plank. Now, when it comes to the asparagus is one of those things where less cooking is better. You want to keep that nice crunch and the integrity of it without it getting mushy, but you want a little caramelization. So you can take that and either put it right on the grill also, and you can grill that on a piece of tin foil, or if you have a special fancy grilling plate for your vegetables, you can do that too. But just a little sprinkle of sea salt really is all you need, and maybe a squeeze of fresh lemon. And you can take that fresh lemon and run it across the salmon after it's cooked also. Fresh lemon and seafood just go so beautifully together.
You've done it again. My mouth's watering, so I know what I'm going to cook for friends and family. Thanks for joining us on Green Sense, and we'll see you back in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys.
Remember, you can see Chef Maria prepare this recipe on Facebook Live. We've included a link in this week's show notes. So subscribe to Green Sense on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit Green Sense Farms. There's a new Dotintown. .eco is an alternative to .com or .net. It's a new ending for web addresses to show you're committed to ecology. And for the next few weeks, it's opened a priority registration period. We're joined by Trevor Bowden, co-founder of .eco, to tell us more. Welcome, Trevor.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your background, Trevor. How did you start this organization?
Sure. We started this organization, I guess, 8 years ago now. My co-founder and I had spent our careers working with the United Nations Environment Program. We saw this opportunity to apply for new internet extensions, and we thought there can't be that many environmentalists out there who also know that this is happening. And so we brought our experience of working with the environmental community to this opportunity to create .eco, and are happy to be able to finally bring it to fruition now.
.eco seems like such a simple, fitting domain name for green, sustainable, or other positive changing projects or businesses that are involved with the environment. What took so long for it to come about?
Well, in order to operate one of these new extensions, and there are thousands that have been applied for in this application round, you needed to go through a pretty extensive process to make sure that you had the technical and financial and operational capabilities to actually run one of these extensions. I mean, you're running critical internet infrastructure. So there's an administrative process, but there was also a process for us of building up support within the environmental community. We took a really unique approach with .eco, which is we went out to the environmental community, whether that was nonprofit campaigning organizations or associations or affiliations of green businesses or individuals, and said to them, what do you think we should do with .eco? How should this be run for the benefit of the environmental community? So taking that feedback, integrating it into our model, and building something that we thought would have benefit for the community took some time.
Trevor, talk a little bit about the financial wherewithal you had to do to pass muster.
Sure. Well, to start with, there was an application fee. I mean, that was a big piece. It cost $185,000 to apply to IGN.
Whoa, that's a screen.
It's not nothing. To apply to ICANN, who is the authoritative body in this space. So they accepted the application fees, they reviewed all the applications, and they made the decision. So on the one side, there was the application fee. On the other side, of course, as an entrepreneur, you're looking for money to help you build the company and to invest in the company. So we've been really fortunate to find great mission-aligned investors in Canada, the US, and in the UK, who saw the potential of Dot.eco and were willing to invest in the development that was necessary to help make it happen.
Well, you've gotten the support of about 50 environmental organizations that are quite reputable, including the World Wildlife Federation, the UN Global Compact. Does that mean that they're going to change their extension and soon will be a Dot.eco?
Well, I think that's one of the things that we'll see over the coming weeks and months. There are, as you say, a lot of organizations that have supported us. Some of them will certainly see changing to Dot.eco names. But there's also a bigger question there about who Dot.eco is for and who might register the names. And as you said in your intro, we see Dot.eco as being a really valuable extension for organizations, but also companies or for products or even for individuals.
Why is it important, and how does a domain name ending help bring about positive change?
Well, it's really your brand online. And so if you can find a great domain name that's short and meaningful and helps tell your story, then that's a really valuable asset for you. And one of the great things about Dot.eco is that it's short and meaningful and it translates well and it's recognized as being related to the environment. So if you see a domain name ending in Dot.eco, we want you to be able to trust that name, and we want that to be an indicator that that person who's using that name or that company that's using that name is doing something to make the world better.
And how do you screen or check to make sure that there's not greenwashing and that these are substantive companies?
Sure. So this was one of the big conversations that we had with the community and one of the key reasons we talked to the community about how Dot.eco should operate. And one of the fundamental principles for them was transparency. So we ask people some questions when they register Dot.eco names. It's about commitment and action. What commitments are you making right now? What actions are you taking? And we make that information publicly available on what we call an eco profile. And that information is available to anyone to see. And so you can kind of look behind any Dot.eco domain name and see what that company or organization is doing.
I'm Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Trevor Bowden, co-founder of the new extension Dot.eco. Trevor, one issue that I would think that can be a bit of a challenge is that many people have business cards printed, their websites printed, people know them by their existing extension. How do you help them transition into a Dot.eco extension?
Yeah, it's a totally common problem. I think lots of people have an existing brand that they're already using, that they're known by, these sorts of things. And so Dot.eco might be for a new product that they're creating, or a new initiative, or a new campaign, or a new company that's starting, any of that sort of innovation where they think, is there a way that we can find a way of telling our story online through our extension? And so on the one hand, we'll see people starting something up from scratch, so that transition problem doesn't exist. In other cases, we provide support materials online for people to understand what the process is of switching over from one domain name to another. But really, they can go to any of the registrars that are out there that are supporting us and working with us. These are the retailers that sell Dot.eco names. And they have a huge amount of material for helping people stand up a new domain or create a new website or anything like that.
There was a .green a few years ago that seemed to be getting some traction. We even interviewed them on the radio show, but it didn't go anywhere. Any idea on why they failed and how you're different and how maybe you can learn from their losses?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. There are, as I say, a lot of new extensions that are out there, and some have been really successful. There's a .xyz, for example, which was priced very low and has a lot of registrations now. .club has also been really successful. One of the things that we're really focused on at .eco is working hard with the community to get the word out about .eco. So working through organizations and networks and company affiliations for organizations that are related to sustainability to make sure that people know that .eco is brought to them by the community and has the backing of that community. And if we can build that trust, I think that we can create a really valuable brand for people and help people to tell their story about what they're doing.
Well, your public launch of .eco is on April 25th, and you're inviting trademark holders to secure their .eco domain names. We wish you the best of luck, and we appreciate you for being on GreenSense.
Thanks very much. I really enjoyed it.
That's Trevor Bowden, co-founder of the new domain name .eco, joining us on GreenSense, where we remind you to subscribe to our podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. It makes you independent, saves energy and money, and is the home of the future. Could all these claims be true? Dwayne Burkholder of New Energy Homes says they are, and he joins us now on GreenSense to talk about this innovative approach to home construction and energy savings. Welcome, Dwayne.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's start out by defining zero energy. It seems obvious, but those two words can be very open to interpretation. What do you mean by zero energy?
You're right, and a lot of people don't understand the term. We typically say net zero energy because our number one goal is to have the person, and we're talking about homes, the person in the home generating as much energy as what they are consuming so that it's a net zero footprint.
How real is that?
Very real, because we're doing it. I mean, you talked about it being the home of the future, but it's the home of today. And my goal was to have net zero homes at near market rate of a standard home.
That's quite impressive. So there's two ways to reach zero net energy. One is by building a home so you don't have to use a lot of energy. And two is by having some renewable energy sources. So talk about the technologies that are in your homes that make them zero energy.
You're right. There's two factors. One, and the number one goal we have is to have our house or building, that envelope, and that's the term of the structure and what goes into that wall and roof system, to have the envelope as energy efficient as possible. So we try to drive at least 50% of that energy consumption in our home out in by redesigning, doing things different, and addressing all three forms of heat transfer. That's how we really get to that 50 to 70% of eliminating the heating and cooling cost. When we do that, now you only need that much less of a solar system, solar panels, to get that renewable to kick in and produce what you've actually consumed to get to the net zero footprint.
So usually when a new technology comes out, the price is expensive, and then over time it gets cheaper. But as you've mentioned earlier, you're able to charge similar rates for similar size houses. How do you keep the cost down?
Well, really, by just reconfiguring materials. My number one goal and motivation was to bring high-performance living solutions to the blue-collar or the low-income housing. So my goal wasn't to see how much money I could make. It was to see, can I really produce what I think I can and bring it to the common person so you really end up with a super affordable, in the whole context, super affordable living solution. And it's just reconfiguring things and taking technology that we know, putting it together in a different format, in a system format. So you're addressing all the different things, the heat, the three forms of heat transfer. You're addressing that in a system, not in just a single product. Oh, what's the R value of that product?
Isn't passion great? And isn't it fun when you're on a path and you're gaining success and you're doing good work out there?
It is. Very, very satisfying. I've done work in for, you know, ministries and nonprofits in third world countries, and trying to take some of the same things that we do here, the innovation. We're ahead of, you know, we really haven't changed our building methods for the last 50 to 70 years, but you go overseas and it's even back further yet. To me, that's the one of my motivations in doing business, is to be able to pass that along to others.
Is there any special type of maintenance or other work that has to be done to keep your home at that zero energy level?
No, there's really two things I focus on. One is in that mix of products for the system, I try to, number one, make it a sustainable product. Is it something that's recyclable or from recycled content, and or is it no to low maintenance? And trying to get that maintenance envelope out there in that 50, 60, 70 year, instead of it, you know, catching you before your house is even paid off.
Well, it sounds like the train's coming. You better get your house out of the way.
You're going past the office here.
You're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Dwayne Burkholder of New Energy Homes, and we're talking about their new energy efficient homes. I'm Robert Colangelo. Can a existing home be easily upgraded using your technology?
Not easily, because some of that, you've already got the core. You've got your walls. You've got your interior structure. I use the same amount of materials, the same wood, as a 2x6 framed stud frame home. I just reconfigure it. And instead of a 6-inch wall system, I end up with a 10.5-inch wall system. So the way one of the reasons the technology works is I'm integrating air spaces, thermal breaks, thermal barriers, radiant barriers. That's really difficult to do when you're trying to make something old into trying to replicate it. There are things you can do to actually stop some of the air movement, the radiant movement. And so there's a few things you can do to better what you have, but not really to replicate it.
Do you have any type of adaptability built into your home? So, for example, what happens if renewable energy technologies have quantum leaps and advancements? Are you able to upgrade the homes you're building with new technology?
Yes, I mean, just in addressing the solar, we actually use a fairly progressive solar. It's a thin film laminate, and we laminate it right to the steel roof, standing seam. So there's the profile is very sleek. The curb appeal is there. You don't have the additional wind load that you've got to account for when you've got crystalline panels mounted up on your roof. You don't have the additional in the snow zones. You don't have that snow and ice piling up behind it, you know, creating a higher load factor onto your roof system. But another product that we're starting to use and integrate is phase change materials, smart thermal storage inside the wall. So, yes, things like that, if you don't put them in right away, are a little more difficult to integrate, but not impossible.
You also have a dealership model. Explain how that works.
We've got our building dealers, and we've got a division now called New Energy Homes. So we establish a different kind of dealer, but very similar in that any leads that we generate, any new design changes, we teach them the conversation. We teach them the technology. We teach them to think differently and how they put things together. The new products, we do the research, but they then can pass that on in their local area to consumers and really have something different, very powerful, to offer.
How will your homes remain relevant with green technology changing so rapidly?
Well, I tell my dealers and I tell customers, especially the dealers, though, that this whole system is going to continue to evolve. It's going to be a dynamic system. It's kind of modular in nature, so we are actually looking at providing ultra-affordable homes internationally. And so you can build on that same, you can either pull away from or add to the components that we put together. So you can have a 650 square foot house package that we can send over to Africa, you know, for $8,000. And yet you can take some of the same ideas that it's based on the same technology and thought patterns as a high-end home here.
That's Dwayne Burkholder of New Energy Homes joining us on GreenSense. I'm Robert Colangelo, reminding you to subscribe to GreenSense Radio on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of GreenSense. Send me an email with your questions, concerns, or ideas to robert@greensenseshow.com. We'll be back next week with...
I'm going to throw a couple numbers at you here. First of all, the year 2030 is going to be here in 13 years. Okay, that's freaking me out. 13 years.
Ouch.
Yeah, no kidding. There's a report out on autonomous vehicles, AVs, that they will account for 15%. Of cars on the road will be self-driving cars. So we'll find out what the story is.
Subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play by visiting greensensefarms.com. And you can also view the list of all the radio stations that air our show. Bob and I have a common goal, and that's to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.